accession number 19667, reel 3.
Johannes Lichtraum, reel 3.
Right. So when we heard this coming from the mountainside, that road over to the other side, we stayed for a very long time in the snow, in the woods, because we didn't know, of course, whether they left any soldiers behind as a sort of, what's the word?
A rear guard.
Yes, a rear guard, just to make sure, you know, that they didn't, Navi didn't disappear, and, you know, they still would have caught us. So eventually, we first went in the right direction, through the woods, away from the road. And when we thought, well, now we must have passed, and it won't be too far now to the bridge, which we got to cross over. Came to the bridge, and found gradually we must have gone higher and higher, because the snow was getting thicker and thicker. Which first, the snow must have been about 6 inches to a foot. It now became more than a foot of snow. We got over the bridge, and that's where we had to go up the mountain, which was, I reckon, about 45 degrees, or not much less, anyway. we hadn't gone all that far through the snow, and the snow was over our knees, and then above our, you know, up to our thighs, and those two were getting very, very tired. So there was only one thing to do. We all had rucksacks, and we took, Wim and I, took one rucksack in the front with our own rucksack at the back. Well, that gave them a little bit more energy, or a little bit easier to go. And it was very slow going, and you pulled yourself up on the branches of shrubs, etc. And De Vaandrick wanted to rest every time. He was so tired. He couldn't go on. But she was very plucky. She had a bad knee. She had already told us she had a bad knee. And she had to be very, very careful with that. But she kept it going all right. And it must have taken us a couple of hours to get to the top of the hill, of the mountain. And then we had to follow it to the left, which is approximately eastwards, I would think. You know, after having seen the maps afterwards, etc. And we had to stop several times because he was so tired. And at one time he wanted us to leave him, so have his rest, and he would come later. I said, no, we are not going to do that, because it was cold, but we didn't know how cold it was. We found out later on it was 25 degrees below zero, 25 degrees Celsius. Anyway, suddenly the first one, I think it was my brother, tripped over a wire. That wire was going down each side of the mountain. So either that was the border line, or it was a trick line to warn the Germans that somebody was going over the mountain, you see. But it was, everything was so frozen that it couldn't have set off any alarm at all. And eventually, after that a couple of hours, the mountain went lower and lower and lower, and we came into a valley. We thought that must be Switzerland. And we didn't see any lights there. Then we definitely would have known. But the lights were not on in that little village there. Because, like we learned later on, the lights in Switzerland were still on. So for any aircraft that would fly over, Germans or British, of course, or American or whatever, they would know that that was Switzerland. And, you know, they mustn't throw any bombs down there. So I said, well, to make sure, I'm the one who can run fastest. You take your rucksacks again, and my rucksack, and you walk on hundreds and hundreds of yards, and I'll go to the second farm We'll leave the first farm. We'll go to the second farm. And I banged on to the doors at the second farm. And eventually somebody came and said, who's there? I said, are we en Suisse? Oui, oui. Vous êtes en Suisse. And then opened the door and talked to us in German or in French. I forget now. So I called the others back. And that was about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, I reckon. And they made us sleep in the sheds with the cows, where it was nice and warm. And then they told us it was 25 degrees below zero.
And this was
so 40. He would have frozen to death anyway. Yeah.
This was 1942?
That was 1942, January 1942. So the next morning, he woke us up. And I said, well, we want to go to Lausanne, or to Bern, where our embassy is. So, thank you very much. And they first gave us breakfast. And he said, no, you can't go. No, you can't go. I got to take you. He said, no, I said, we can go all right. You know, no, he said. And then he pointed, it was all in French, and then he pointed out he had some red seams in his trousers. And either something to do with either police, and I expect he was police, or also border customs or whatever. And he took us to the train, and with the train he took us to Lausanne. Pontoyer. And there he took us to the prison. That prison was called through all of them who passed there, before us and afterwards, Hotel de la Tour. Because it's round, like a lot of prisons are. And we found names, Dutch names, in the passage of the prison, of people who, there were just a few, who had already passed there. So we put our names to it as well. Yeah. And we were there, I think, about 3 nights. And then we were guided again to Bern, to our embassy. But first we had interrogation. That could have been in Pontoyer. Well, it could have been in Bern. I'm not quite sure. I think it was in Pontoyer, by the military. And they asked us what sort of signs that the lorries and all the other road vehicles had of the Germans in Holland. We felt so awful that we had never thought about anything like that. So we couldn't tell them anything. No. But they heard our stories, etc., and accepted everything, no doubt. And then we went to Bern. At Bern, we saw General van Tricht, who was the military attaché with the embassy, and we had to tell our stories there. And we were well dined, very, very nice hotel, etc. But later on, after that, after all these formulas had been filled in, forms had been filled in, that we wanted to go to the UK, etc., and wanted to go further. And we were sent to a camp in Cossonay, not very far from Lausanne. They had just erected that camp, because there were several Dutchmen there, and they'd found a valley which always had been waterlogged and couldn't be used. And they said, well, the Dutch are so good at poldering and drying out land that we got this job for you. Which was very, very nice. And we were in this camp for quite some time. I forgot something. We were first sent to a village not very far from Geneva. That's right. Where we were in a sort of local small hotel. And fortunately, we tried to do some skiing in the snow. And we used to go sort of on a pair of skis borrowed from the hotelier. And they didn't fit our boots too well. So we just went down the hill. And then we decided we'd go there at night time. But of course at night time, the snow was much harder, much icier. And I was the first one to go down. And suddenly I see a big stack, over a meter high, about 1 meter 20 high, I reckon it was, of logs in front of me. So I jumped it, and I probably must have touched it. Anyway, I fell down and on a track which was formed by carts, horse and carts. Well, that's just like that.
Rutted.
And rutted. And I fell with my left side on it. Between trees, I didn't hit the tree, thank goodness, because the trees were fairly close together. And I couldn't move. I could hardly speak. I couldn't call out very well. And eventually the others came down with a sledge and they found me, they put me on the sledge. I think they had to go and get a sledge from the hotel. They put me on the sledge and took me to the hotel back again. Within a few days, my temperature was getting higher and higher and the local doctor was called. Already before that, but it was getting worse. And the doctor came eventually on, I think, about the fourth or the fifth day, came and had some glass cups. And he put those on my side, which drew out the blood. And it showed when they took me to the hospital in Geneva that I had two broken ribs and that punctured my lung. So I was in hospital about 3.5 to 4 weeks. So in the meanwhile, that sent my brother to the Italian border of Switzerland, to another camp, which was very, very nice because it was already summery there, whereas it was still winter in whatever. So then after that, we were sent to the camp, and I had an easy job because I'd had that accident, you see. So I was a made gardener. I always hated gardens because if I didn't do too well at school or I'd done something naughty, I had to help my father in the garden. So that, anyway, we had a very nice time there. Once in a fortnight, every fortnight, we were allowed to go to Lausanne. And I met some, I was invited by some Dutch, previously Dutch people, who were near Dam de Lemans and had a hotel there. Of course, hotel business was hopeless in those days because, you know, they didn't have anybody coming there. But they were very nice and I had some very nice weekends there. So eventually my brother came back to Geneva, or near to Geneva, and the people who had arranged to put us over the border from Holland to Belgium, they had to escape because the whole thing had been rolled up a bit. I know they had taken into custody the consul in Antwerp, but luckily enough, the Van Iftricks, that was the family, had arranged under the fireplace a place where they could hide if necessary. And they had been hiding there for 3 days and only the daughter was in the building. So when they came, the Germans kept coming and seeing if they could find anything, but they never found this place. So after about 3 days, they had to go and escape, and they also escaped to Switzerland. And they were really, very, had been very, very active, these people. he had a Bakelite factory there. And of course, the Bakelite factory was more or less closed after that. And they came to Switzerland and they started arranging for all the Dutch boys to go to Spain. That escape was also arranged with the police in Geneva, which was very, very, very active fellow, and the super in Geneva. And he put us over the border. One night we had to go to a certain place and stay there until they would arrange it for us in the dark to go over the border. Unfortunately, I had a little cut or something on my hand. I think it was my left hand. And I was getting pain under my armpit. So that was in the afternoon. And I thought there was only one way. I can't miss this. Open it up and put iodine on it and sort of made sure. And that must have done all right, because by the time it was 11 o'clock and they came and fetched it, you know, it had gone and I felt all right. So there were four of us again. One was on a kink. He had been a policeman in Nijmegen in Holland. And of course he had been in the underground situation, and he had escaped, luckily enough, before they caught him. And the other one was a younger fellow who had come back from Spain, from a camp in Miranda, which is on the east coast of there. And that was very, very nasty situation. They had it very, very bad, and several came back from there and came to Switzerland instead. And he spoke a good deal of French, which was a good situation because we didn't speak French so well. Anyway, we're taken through the woods, and it's surprising how many sentries they had there, the Swiss. And this super adjutant, he knew the word, and we could get through to the next and the next and the next until we got to the border. And then he showed us the whole railway system at the border on the French side, and he told us where we had to go in which direction. Of course, we thought that we had the right sort of carte d'identité, but a mistake was made. Anyway, we decided to take the train from not there, that village, but from the next village on. But it was a tricky business going over this railway system, because it was huge. And the trains kept coming, and you know, suddenly the train would come your way. And then you had to jump aside and get onto another track. But anyway, all the tracks led in one direction through to the south. We took the train in the morning, got tickets, that was all right, that went okay. But then control came, a policeman came. And I was the first one from where he started. And carte d'identité. No, monsieur. I thought something wrong. So I tried to bribe him with some money. Because, you know, we all know what the French are like. They're happy to see some money, aren't they? Now, he wouldn't accept it. So he took us to Annecy, and I said, are there more of you? I said, yes, there are more. And we all had the wrong stamp. You could have a stamp from the police. You could have a stamp from Securité, etc. But not from the traitors, which had an organization. I forget the name now. They've got them something national, you know. They had used those stamps, they'd given us those stamps in Geneva. Of course, not thinking that that was just the one, not knowing that that was the one that they couldn't give. They couldn't put a stamp on your carte d'identité. So, we were interrogated. And eventually, a higher policeman came in, higher rank. And we knew, he said that he came from the Alsace. And he wanted to talk to us. Well, where do you want to go? We want to go to Spain. Why? He said, we want to go to the UK, to England. And he said, all right, what we'll do, we'll send you for a few days to Rumilly until we get proper papers for you. Stamped the right way. And we went to Rumilly, which was about, I think we went by bus, and which was probably about 10 miles away, something like that, or maybe a little bit less. And we were put in a hotel there. Of course, we had enough money given to us in Switzerland. And there was one lot of men there. And he couldn't quite hear what language they spoke. They were sitting the other side of the big hall where we had our breakfast and where we had our meals. And my hearing is not too good, but the other said, I think they're talking German. So that put the wind up us. And we decided that was long enough. That was too dangerous. In the meanwhile, we'd had a gentleman come in breeches, brown riding boots, typical French officer type, and had been watching us. That was already the second day, I think. And he'd been watching us. So he must have sort of been looking at whether we were really right people or whether we were wrong people, you see. Because we could have been Dutch or people who wanted to, you know, to catch people in France who were coming from Switzerland, or who, you know, there were a lot of Jews were in France, etc., etc. So we had an address given to us by the one who's from in Switzerland. If you get in trouble in Annecy, go to the Reformed minister. And he will, you know, guide you further. So we walked a beautiful day, snow on the mountains of the Alps. We walked to this place in Annecy and found it. And he, the minister was just, it was on a Sunday morning. The minister was just going to his congregation, but he put it off. The congregation must have waited at least another hour before he spoke to his, as a shepherd to his people. He gave us false identity cards and put a stamp on by using correct identity cards, boiling eggs hard and rolling them over the stamp, and then carefully rolling them over our identity cards. And it was perfect. That, of course, he knew, but he could use, you see. And then we went on our way, and he went to his congregation. Somebody must have gone back, also been caught or something, and gone back to Switzerland and tell them what was wrong with the stamps. Because the police, we remember, they told us later on in Spain that the police in Annecy had said, "My God, those four were in a hell of a hurry." And because we had never gone back to the police, you see. So we'd gone from Remly, we'd gone to the minister, and from there we went by train to Lyon. When we arrived in Lyon, we got out of the center of the town, which was lucky. And we were going uphill when somebody said in French, when he passed us, "You people look very conspicuous." And he went on and he walked faster up the hill, and we found that he was a Jesuit, Roman Catholic, and he was going to the monastery. So we hailed him and said, "Well, what is it?" He said, "There are razzias in Lyon and they're rounding up Jews and people who are suspect." Boop! We were lucky once more. So he said, "All right, I'll take you to the monastery," where we had to eat, etc. Then somehow we heard that there had been troubles in Marseille. There had been riots in Marseille, and police were sent from everywhere to Marseille to keep down the riots. So we still had to go further, and we had to go back from Lyon to Narbonne in the south of France, and from there to the Spanish border. So we said, "Well, that will be dangerous, because as soon as we get into the gare for the railway station, for one thing, will we be getting tickets? Because if they're sending train fulls of people, of police, to Marseille, we're not going to get tickets." So he decided he would help us, and he will go and get the tickets. So we gave him the money, and we waited outside the station. And he came back, because he was a priest, or a Jesuit priest, or whatever. He had, the man at the station had given him 4 tickets. And we went through the control, all right. He waited outside, and saw that we went through the control, and we went into the train. And I decided I'll sit on a tiny little bench, a flat bench, like you got in the cinema, etc., which was next to the toilet. I thought, "Well, I can keep myself asleep there, because I don't speak French very well, so just a few words. I can always say oui, oui, or no, no, according to what I think should it be." And, you know, the whole night, of course, the policemen were coming to the toilet and said something sometimes, and I, oui, monsieur. And that was all I did. I hoped that I was saying the right thing. So...